Chapter 66. I spent the rest of my 13th life quietly hunting Vincent, and failing. It is my suspicion that, in the aftermath of his attack on the Cronus Club, he was very deliberately keeping his head down, avoiding the attention of his now roused, if weakened, enemies. Nevertheless, I continued my search, as I have no doubt he searched for me, and occasionally followed the odd lead to unlikely places, always a little too late, a little too far behind. If my security measures were paranoid, I suspect Vincent Rankis in that life was operating on a whole other level. I can only speculate as to whether he was as lonely as I. I lived far longer than I usually do, pushing both my body and the limits of medical science. No one seemed surprised that a money launderer wanted access to advanced technical equipment, nor did my doctors, after suitable bribes were administered, question why I might so firmly dictate the course of my treatment when the inevitable diseases struck. I had been surprised at how easy it is to corrupt men. Even good men, it seemed, could be swayed once you had them used to the notion that it was acceptable to give them a gift of a bottle of wine, then a gift of a new toy for their kid, then a gift of a day out for the family, then a weekend away, then membership of a golf club, then a new car. By which point, the great mass of gifts already accepted made the rejection of this latest present hard even for the best of men, and their status as morally compromised assets complete in both the eyes of criminals and the view of the law. May was patiently loyal to the last. Her lover ran away in 1976, and she never sought another, spending her time instead writing furious letters to disreputable companies and campaigning vigorously for the Democrats. We saw in the year 2000 in New York, neither of us strong enough to travel further afield at our time of life, and May wept like a true native as George W. Bush won the election.
"It's all gone to hell," she exclaimed. "There's no talking to people anymore."
We sat in silence watching the Twin Towers fall in 2001, over and over again, a loop on every screen across the country. May said,
"I'm thinking of buying a flag to put out in our garden,"
and was dead 3 months later. I had never seen the 21st century before. I wasn't particularly impressed by the medicine, even less so by the politics, and in 2003, having decided at the ripe old age of 85 that another round of chemotherapy wouldn't do any good and that the painkillers I was now physiologically and psychologically dependent on were weakening my mind to the point of no return, I bequeathed half of my fortune to May's favourite charity and half to any Kalachakra who could find it, and took an overdose one cool October night. I think there is a study of the effects of narcotic addiction over multiple lifespans. I died in my 13th life utterly dependent on medications of a wide and occasionally interacting kind, and to this day I cannot help but wonder whether their effects on both my body and mind do not linger. I know it is absurd to suggest that any event in 2003 can have implications for those of 1919, but one day, with the subject's permission, I think I would enjoy studying the physiology of an infant Kalachakra who died of drug dependency in their last life, to observe whether there are any marked effects on the child. Whether there were on me in my 14th life, I cannot tell, as, following the usual course, I did not begin to recover full faculties for the normal passage of years. I made no attempt to contact the club during this childhood, limiting myself instead to the essential tricks of a youthful Aruberan: theft, manipulation, exploiting sports results and gambling outfits to acquire any money I might need. In truth, I was also still determined to keep my head down and made no attempts to run away or find Vincent, but worked as Patrick August's apprentice in the grounds of the house, as I had done so many lives ago, before the Cronus Club entered my existence. In 1937, I applied for a scholarship at Cambridge to study history, considering that with so many Aruberans forced to forget and the Cronus Club in such a poor state of affairs, a knowledge of the past and, more importantly, of the means to study it, might allow me to detect patterns in events which I could usefully connect to Vincent in years to come. When I was offered the place, the Hunes were gobsmacked, not least because Clement, my pasty cousin, had actually been turned down, a thing almost unimaginable for one of his wealth and background at the time. My grandmother Constance, for almost the first time in that life, summoned me to her study. I had noticed something of a pattern in the Hunes' relationships with me. For most of my lives, My biological father, Rory, ignored me, as one might ignore a somewhat embarrassing disease, a thing that is part of yourself, but best not discussed with others. My aunt Alexandra showed cautious interest, hidden behind a mask of respectability. Victoria ignored everyone who wasn't of use to her, and I was no different. And my grandmother Constance actively shunned me, and yet was also the regular bearer of bad news. If my actions were somehow disreputable, and at that time it took very little for a bastard son's deeds to be considered disreputable, it was Constance, more than Rory, who did what she doubtless considered to be necessary but dirty work. So it was then, and as I was summoned into her study, a scholarship boy of 18 years old, she was already set for recriminations, her back turned to the door through which I entered, a pair of hanging silver earrings bouncing beside the harsh line of her chin. She glanced at me in the mirror by which she adorned herself, before her eyes darted back to the examination of her ears, and, without turning, she said,
"Ah, Harry, yes, I did want to see you, didn't I?"
It had been remarkably easy to move beyond the fact that, in my infant years, Constance had wanted to throw me back whence I came. To me, after all, these revelations were hundreds of years old. Yet I had to recall that to her, the impulse was only as old as my current physical body. She faffed with her earring a little longer, then turned sharply, as if all interest was lost in this task, to stare at me hard down a pointed nose. Whatever unkind genetic pixie had gifted me with my face, it hadn't spawned on her side of the family.
"I hear you are for Cambridge," she said at last. "Not quite as fashionable as Oxford, but I suppose for someone like you it must be a great thing."
"I'm very glad, ma'am."
"Glad? Is that what you are? Yes, I suppose you must be. They tell me that the college was so impressed that they are overlooking your background. Is that correct? Your father can't be having letters asking for financial assistance once you're gone. That won't do at all."
"The college have been very generous," I replied, "and I have some other means." Her eyebrows arched in disdain at this notion.
"Do you? Do you, indeed?"
A bit back on my reply, "Yes, biological grandmother, I know precisely who wins the Grand National every year from 1921 to 2004, as well as having an encyclopedic knowledge of famous boxing matches, football championships, and even the occasional dog race for the same period, in case I am starved of choice." Somehow, it didn't seem like an appropriate revelation for the moment.
"Of course, it's very inconvenient of you to leave at this time,"
she blurted against my more considered silence.
"Your father is hardly as young as he was, and the grounds... well, I needn't tell you how much he's valued his work for this family. I had rather expected you to do the same."
It was a conversation I'd had with Constance every time I'd left the nest for any employment other than national service. At first I thought it was sheer resentment at my potential success, but as the conversations rolled by, I had begun to wonder if it were not a deeper anxiety, a desire, even now, to keep control of the boy who symbolized her son's greatest mistake. I remembered Holy Island, my father dying in a room above a cottage, and felt a brief flush of unexpected shame at the things I had said to him.
"It's actually rather ungrateful, I think, for a boy like you to just abandon his home like this."
The words brought me back to my grandmother's study. I imagine there had been some preamble to this statement, but live as a servant long enough, and you acquire an understanding of when sound is meaningless.
"Ungrateful, ma'am?" I queried. "You've been a part of this household your whole life," she replied, "practically a part of the estate. And now to just pick up and go, it's really not what we were expecting from you, Harry, I must admit. We all thought rather better of you."
"Better than getting a scholarship to Cambridge?" I suggested.
"Yes, and the backhanded way in which you did that. No seeking permission, no extra studies, no tuition at all, from what I can see. It's not how these things are done."
I stared at Constance and wondered if in her way she wasn't quite mad. Not a neurological madness, not a disease of the mind, but rather a cultural madness, an infection of expectations which corrupted her perception of what should be and what actually was. Under any other circumstances, I would have been praised as a genius, an unmitigated hero, and quite possibly a model for social reform in stodgy times. But to Constance, all these things made me a rebel. I wondered what she would make of the 21st century, if she would have wept when the Twin Towers fell. Was it a world she would have been able to comprehend?
"Are you asking me to stay?" I queried.
"You're a young man," she retorted. "If you want to abandon your father and go off to a place where I personally feel you'll be quite unsuited to the life, then, of course, that's entirely your decision."
What would this conversation have been like, I wondered, if I was only 18 years old? Now, in my 849th year, it was almost funny. I informed her I would consider my position most carefully. She sniffed some empty words in reply and dismissed me with a wave. I made it to the end of the corridor before I burst out laughing.